On Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA, it is WRTA Weekend. With us, the one, the only, Dr. Gabe Merkin.
Well, hello, everybody.
I'm Doug Herendeen. We thank Dr. Merkin for coming in here. A reminder, there'll be a podcast of the show at the end of the broadcast at WRTA.com. The first thing we start off with this time of year is wear sunscreen, right?
Yes, and realize that sunscreen is the third most effective protector against the sun. The most important protector you have is a roof, and the second most important protector are clothes. Then you have a sunscreen, and you should also know that there are some chemicals have been found in sunscreens that cause cancer, and they've been removed. One of the carcinogens has removed is benzene, and now the FDA definitely approves zinc and titanium, two minerals that are now felt to be safe and effective sunscreens. So the proven safe sunscreens contain zinc and titanium.
All right, so that's something to keep in mind. Read the label and then buy accordingly. Secondly, we've been dealing with the heat here, and admittedly, we're recording this a few days before it airs, so watch, it'll be 68 degrees by the time that would be nice if it was 68. Overnight maybe, but not during the day. But it's going to come and go over the course of the year. And a story I picked just because it was typical of a lot of them, this was posted by Boston.com, the news organization there. Extreme heat is gripping New England. An ER doctor shares how to stay safe. Spoke with Dr. Andrew Ira, emergency medical physician, Brigham and Women's Hospital. Heat-related illnesses operate on a spectrum, and recognizing when symptoms are becoming dangerous can be life-saving. He said heat exhaustion symptoms include sweating, dizziness, weakness, nausea, headache. It's unpleasant, doesn't feel good, but it is not as dangerous as heat stroke. Heat stroke is really more of a life-threatening pathology where your body is showing signs that it can't compensate anymore and you're starting to cause damage. Now, I remember I was on a we were doing one of these litter campaigns years ago at the radio station I worked at. So we went out with a crew, and we're all along this highway, and we all got the bags, we got the little stick with the nail on it. We're picking up all this litter, and I don't feel so good at this point because I realize it's now like 89 degrees. I'm wearing sunscreen. I've got a hat on, but boy, I didn't feel too good. And they said, "Get in the truck. It's air conditioned." And here, have some more water, because they said you're going to get heat stroke. It's not pleasant. How easy is it to overdo it, Dr. Merkin?
Well, it's very easy, and you really should pay attention, because heat exhaustion means you get fatigue. And when you're out in the sun and you suddenly feel very tired, or you start to feel weak and you start to not remember things as well, you better get out immediately, because heat stroke can kill you. Heat stroke means the temperature, your body temperature is so high that you're frying your brain. You are literally cooking your brain just the way you cook an egg on a griddle. And your brain, and that's permanent damage, and that can be your death. So once you start having brain symptoms where you can't remember, you don't know where you are, you don't know who you are, or you pass out directly, you're in big trouble. When you see somebody that's passed out from the heat, or you see somebody who is talking to you where they can't remember anything, they're in danger of dying. You've got to get them out of the heat immediately, and that's what you mentioned. If you can transfer them to any other place away from the heat, do so immediately, if not sooner, and then you start treating them.
Yeah, in the article it says, if someone appears to be experiencing heat stroke, as I apparently was in the way I was acting, don't wait for emergency responders before trying to cool them. They suggest removing them from the heat, placing a fan in front of them while they put me in the air-conditioned van, cooling your body with ice packs, didn't do that, around their armpits or neck, or splashing cool water on them, that they did. The most effective ways to prevent heat-related emergency is to limit how long you stay in direct sun and to give your body regular opportunities to cool off. Take regular breaks if you're going to be outside. If someone doesn't have a safe space, there are other resources around, whether it's a community center, a cooling center, which we've had on the news here occasionally when they have them. and they really have nowhere else safe to be, that's when the hospital can come into play. Your body loses water constantly during extreme heat, even if you don't realize it. Making sure you're staying hydrated is another important way to ward off dehydration. Too much of water is still not a good thing, but how much is too much when you do something like that?
Let me go over that, because that's very, very important. When you're out in the sun, you lose water and salt. So this is a time where you have to have some kind of salt, and you can have that by eating food. Food can say almost all foods that are available and will contain salt. But the cause of death in heat is called hyponatremia. And here's the mechanism: when you're taking in too much fluid and you're not getting enough salt, your blood salt levels go down. So now you have more salt in your brain than you have salt in your blood. So the fluid moves from low salt to high salt. So fluid moves from your blood into your brain, and you're getting brain swelling. And the cause of death, when you see athletes or people during exercise passing out, the most common cause is hyponatremia. It means taking massive amounts of water without taking compensatory salt. So now you've moved the fluid from your blood because of the high salt in your brain and low salt in your blood. From the fluid is now into your brain. Your brain is swelling, and you die from a swollen brain. So hyponatremia kills, and when you start replacing fluid, yes, people need to have fluid. But you want to get them, if the people have already passed out, that means heat stroke. You want to get them intravenous fluids, where the intravenous fluid will contain salt and water, so you don't swell their brain and kill them. If you treat them with just giving them fluid, you can kill a person after they have the brain swelling start.
Well, I've known older people who would get a little bit disoriented in their very later years, and occasionally if they would go to the ER or something, the doctor would give them saline solution, and that seemed to bring them right back to their normal selves within very short time.
That's very good medicine. That's a smart doctor, yes.
Okay, in the article here it says, for people working outdoors, exercising, or spending long stretches in the heat, replacing electrolytes along with fluids can be especially important, sort of what you're talking about. I'm not endorsing a specific brand, but there's a whole bunch of sports drinks like Gatorade. Do they actually do anything?
Yes, because they contain salt. The danger is drinking huge amounts of water. You can kill a person when you're giving them huge amounts of water and no salt replenishment. That's why if you use the rule, feed them when, even if they're nauseous and tired, if you feed them with water, you probably will be all right. But the danger of killing somebody is giving them huge amounts of water without salt, and the people die from brain swelling from the hypo-low-salt syndrome.
Sipping until you've consumed an 8-ounce glass of water shouldn't be a problem. Drinking 32 ounces, that would be a problem.
That's correct. The more water you drink and replacing will cause. It's the dilution of the salt in your bloodstream that causes the brain swelling. So you need salt and water. And when you have a person who is confused, has any kind of brain symptoms, call that heat stroke. That's a medical emergency. Get medical help immediately, or sooner. Get them out of the sun. Start cooling them. And it doesn't matter how you do it. You can pour water on them. Once you get them out of the sun, besides pouring water on them, you can put ice in their armpits. You do anything you can to cool them.
That's about the only time I've had experience with that. I've had other times where I'm thinking, boy, I'm hot, I'm sweaty out here, but I never got to the point where I was starting to feel loopy. And I get the feeling I was not the only one that had done this, because, you know, these were people that were used to going out on these litter crews all the time and picking up stuff, because they would volunteer for a certain stretch of highway. It was a business or something. And all of us from the radio station joined them at different spots along the road, 220 near Williamsport, if anybody cares. And stop throwing stuff along I-99 and 22, and we won't have to send anybody out to do that. So
And remember, if you're in a marathon or any long-term exercise, you have to take salt with water because you can die of hyponatremia syndrome, which is brain swelling caused by diluting out the salt level in your blood, which causes the brain swelling, and you die from a swollen brain. So marathon runners have to take water with salt, and so can people who exercise for a long time in the sun.
Well, that brings up something else. And did you used to do marathons, or it was mainly bicycle?
No, I'm in the marathon, the Roadrunners Club of America Hall of Fame. I ran a lot of marathons, and I once was stupid enough not to take enough salt. And I remember, I'll never forget it. I walked in to finish, and I should have just gone home. When you start feeling sick and you start losing your memory and everything, you go home, forget about finishing the marathon. It may kill you because you can die of this so-called salt dilution syndrome.
Well, when I've seen coverage of the Boston Marathon or the New York Marathon or any type of race like that on TV, I notice that they have people who are along the route holding out cups of, I presumed, water at the time. But is it usually the Gatorade along with the water or what?
It's usually water and it's usually a solution of something that has salt in water. The rule for everybody is if you're going to be in a prolonged exercise for more than an hour in very hot weather, eat. Because that'll usually cover you. You'll get the salt from the food because the big mistake is taking just water after exercising for more than a couple of hours in the sun. If you're exercising for long term in the sun, eat food or certainly get a solution that contains salt. And most solutions don't, the regular sugar solutions don't usually contain salt unless they're special sports drinks, which do contain salt.
Well, this is something unrelated to the article, but I just remembered this. I was a member at a gym for a very short time in my life, aggregate, and most of the PE I took was when I was in school. That's it. But I had some people argue, why do they have it air conditioned in here? We want to sweat, don't we? It's like, well, if you're doing anything that's exerting yourself, whether it's air conditioned or not, it's not like it's 60 degrees in here. It's like it's 70. You're going to sweat anyway. And they were like, oh, no, we should go outside and do this type of stuff. They ought to have it out. Is there any logic to any of that? To me, it was like, no, bring in the air conditioning.
Bring in the air conditioning. That's the rule. The rule is you can die from too much heat, and the cause of death, heat exhaustion, where you run out of fluid or you run out of salt, or heat stroke, where your body temperature rises so that you fry your brain literally, so your brain is turned into solid material that can't function and you die.
Well, that's not pleasant, so everybody should remember what Dr. Merkin has suggested here. And by the way, if you want to read these articles, each of them is going to be posted on the Facebook page, well, on the, I should say, on WRTA.com, on the podcast page of this particular show. They'll be right there above where you click to play it, and we'll have a link on the Facebook page as well, so you'll be able to find that. It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen and the one and only Dr. Gabe Merkin. One of the other articles we have comes from CBS News. Tick season is expected to be worse than normal as ER visits rise in much of the U.S. This summer, tick season expected to be worse. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports the highest rate of emergency room visits from tick bites since 2017 across most of the country. It's definitely concerning to see ticks in new areas and the diseases that follow, said Rebecca Osborne, epidemiologist at Wisconsin Department of Health Services. So warmer temperatures can bring ticks into new areas. One of the type of tick health officials are keeping an eye out is the Lone Star tick. It can carry alpha-gal, which can create a red meat allergy in infected people. They're also tracking something called powassan, a virus that attacks the central nervous system and can lead to memory loss, difficulty speaking, and seizures. Sadly, despite all of our education about tick bite prevention, we are seeing all tick-borne diseases increase. According to the CDC, removing the tick within 24 hours can help prevent Lyme disease, one of the most common tick-borne illnesses. They said, if you find a tick in your body, remove it as soon as possible. Use a tick removal device or a set of tweezers. After you remove the tick, if you notice a rash or fever, see your doctor. Do a careful check to make sure you don't have any additional ticks. I talked to somebody about this a few years ago. I think we discussed the idea that you could become allergic to red meat. And I had several people push back on that. It's like, that's insane. How can that happen? But apparently, it is a thing. You can develop allergies. Is that correct?
Yes, and this is an incredible. Let me go over that, because this has implications for heart attacks and strokes and premature death, not from tick bites. It's the same mechanism. A person gets bit by a tick. They get a protein that causes an allergy from the tick. And every time they eat meat afterwards, they can get an allergic reaction. Like, they can break out in hives, red splotches in their skin. They can get headache. They can pass out, and they can even die. And the mechanism from this is evolution. This is incredible. Now, humans are mammals. Did you know that?
It seemed to recall that, yes.
Yes. But humans, several million years ago, were not any better than mammals. We shared Earth with all the other mammals. We weren't better than them. Then humans had a genetic mutation. They changed a protein. A protein change, and we have strong research to support this. We change the protein, one protein to another. We call the original protein that all other mammals have is NEU5GC, and humans have NEU5AC. In other words, one lipoprotein in all mammals is changed, except it changed only in humans. So humans have a different protein than NEU5GC. So when you eat meat, you're getting NEU5GC that's not part of you. An allergic reaction means that you get a protein that's not part of you, because you don't react, get allergies to proteins that are yours. You get a protein that's not you, and into you, and you can become allergic, and you can stay allergic forever. So when you get the tick bite has bitten other mammals before you, and the tick bite gives you this NEU5GC that you don't have, and you develop antibodies against it because it's not you. And then you can become allergic. And then every time you get meat, which has this NEU5GC, every time you get it, you can have the same allergic reaction, whether it's hives or passing out or wheezing or coughing or anything else. And that's called the alpha gel syndrome. The name of the protein is also called alpha gel as well. So every time this person, once they become allergic from the tick bite to the meat, every time they eat meat, they get the itching, swelling, shortness of breath, or whatever their allergic reaction is. And the same thing is with heart attacks. The evidence is incredibly strong that people who eat meat are at an increased risk for heart attacks. And it's the same type of reasoning. And the reason is that when you eat meat, you get this protein called NEU5GC that you're not allergic to, and that turns on your immunity. And while you're eating mammal meat, it doesn't apply to chicken, it doesn't apply to fish, it applies only to other mammals than humans. You get your immunity turned on, and that immunity staying on all the time can increase your risk for heart attacks. And here we have somebody that went in, and you're getting this allergy to meat from a tick bite. And that's called alpha gel syndrome, which is incredibly interesting. So if you see a tick, and not everybody, it's not very common, but it's common enough to be very, very concerned about it. So if you get hives or itching or anything like that after eating meat, it may have been from a tick bite that you could have had years ago, where they planted this meat protein, NEU5GC, into your body, and you became allergic. It's like becoming allergic to ragweed pollen. Every time time you get exposed to ragweed pollen, you can get the wheezing, the shortness of breath, the coughing, or whatever your allergic reaction is. And the research that went into this is absolutely, absolutely incredible. The other thing that you can get from a tick bite is a virus infection that's called powassan. And this virus is horrible. This virus that is transmitted by ticks can also damage your brain. It can kill you. It can cause seizures. So tick bites are not safe. If you ever see a tick, you should wear clothes when you're out in the woods. And if you see a tick bite, get something to remove the tick, and tweezers are excellent. You grab the tick with a tweezer and get it off and wash that area with soap and water as quick as you can.
When I was going through the woods a couple of summers ago, my friends have a place in upstate New York, and it's very rural and certainly not palatial, but it's surrounded by a lot of hiking areas. And we went through the area, and what we did was I'm wearing appropriate shoes to take a long walk, sneakers, and I've got my socks over the pant legs, the cuffs of my long pants, and he also had sprayed something all over the shoes and all over the pant legs, some type of insecticide or something, to help repel the ticks. He says it doesn't, you know, it's not 100%, but this is, it's better than not using it at all. And we didn't have any problems because we did look around at our legs and everything, make sure before we went back in the house. And we didn't encounter anything as far as we know. The thing I find interesting, is there anything else we could have done?
No, you do. And yeah, there's one more concern I have to tell you, that insecticides look like they're carcinogens. People who use insecticides all the time are at increased risk for certain cancers. So there's a concern about using herbicides and insecticides all the time. I'm not talking about a single exposure.
Yeah.
I'm talking about repeated, constant exposures. So, yeah, but the message is tick bites can be very, very harmful. Incidentally, this genetic mutation that makes humans different from all other mammals may be responsible. There's some research now that shows that the human brain, the enlarger brain, comes from this genetic mutation. The NEU5GC to NEU5AC gives humans a larger brain. And that's why humans rule the Earth. They rule the Earth because of a mutation millions of years ago that gave humans a bigger brain that can be smarter. And we rule the Earth because of our brains.
As far as ticks and Lyme disease, there's still so many people, and I've talked to people about this, that have been diagnosed with it usually years after, and usually after getting a false diagnosis from doctor after doctor, who say, it's all in your head, or no, you don't have a problem, or you're just looking for drugs, or something like that. And then years later, they figure out, no, this person had Lyme disease. And usually they would have noticed anything too late to really been helped. You have to diagnosis as soon as possible,
right? And get the antibiotic earlier, yes. That's the problem.
Finding out about it 3 years later is not going to help you. You need the antibiotic how quickly?
You've already got damage. That's correct.
Yeah, but if somebody can diagnose it within, 36 hours, 24 hours, how long do you think?
Well, the point is, if you get a tick bite and you notice swelling around it, you really should see a doctor. He can run a test, and he may give you, this may be an indication for antibiotics before you get a laboratory confirmation of a diagnosis.
I know that we overprescribe antibiotics, but at a time like that, before you get a diagnosis back from the lab, is it worth giving somebody a course of some antibiotic just to make sure?
Yeah, yes, because we have antibiotics to block several of the tick-borne infections, including Lyme disease.
It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, the one and only Dr. Gabe Merkin, is with us. We have a story here, and I had not heard of this, but I'm not exactly 15 years old. A 15-year-old is dead after a dangerous Benadryl challenge left her brain dead. Leah Presson, 15, was left with zero brain activity after participating in the so-called Benadryl challenge. And by the way, we're not disparaging Benadryl here. This is the misuse of it. So let's be clear about that on it. Let's be clear about that. A viral contest sweeping the U.S. that medical experts warn can quickly spiral into life-threatening territory. The challenge which sees people consume the allergy medication in dangerously high doses in order to cause a high with hallucinations first emerged in 2020 has been steadily gaining momentum in recent weeks. Leah had been fighting for her life after she began experiencing seizures directly after ingesting the medication, which is sold over-the-counter to those 18-plus in America. Her father, Richard, has since confirmed that the teen has passed away, despite the family clinging to hope that she was pronounced brain dead on June 14th. Primarily found on social media platforms like TikTok, the Benadryl Challenge encourages young people to take dangerous amounts of the over-counter drug, diphenhydramine? How do you say it?
Diphenhydramine, yes.
Okay. Commonly found in products such as Benadryl and other over-the-counter medications. The challenge urges viewers to take as many as 12 at a time to induce hallucinations.
Frightening.
Yeah, and the maximum allowed dosage in a 24-hour period is 6 tablets for children under 12. So taking more than that can lead to nausea, seizures, and even death. Had you heard of this challenge before, Doctor?
Yes. Let me talk about it. This is incredible. Kids are always looking for all kinds of strange things, and Benadryl in large doses causes hallucinations. So a kid takes 12 Benadryl pills at once. 12. And they start hallucinating, and they think that's a good thing. They start seeing all kinds of things that aren't real, and they think that's good. But think about how Benadryl causes hallucinations. Benadryl is an antihistamine. It works to block allergic reactions by blocking histamine. Histamine is a brain stimulant. So when you take recommended doses of histamine, very low doses, 50 milligrams or what have you, you get a decreased brain stimulation and decreased stimulation in your body, and it helps to decrease allergic reactions. But if you take large doses of Benadryl that block histamine, you block your stimulation of your brain, and your brain goes dead. And these images and hallucinations, and then the brain shuts down. They stop breathing, and their blood pressure drops, and they're dead. So the mechanism is it takes its regular action in low doses, which can help a person decrease an allergic reaction, but in large doses can send the blood pressure down to zero, stop the brain from functioning, and shut off the brain so the person stops breathing and the person dies. It's absolutely frightening. And the rule is, for God's sakes, don't ever take large doses. Incidentally, Benadryl's been around since 1946, 80 years. It's been a bestseller over the counter without a prescription for more than 80 years. And now, 80 years after its original inception, we're reading about its killing people. Frightening, frightening, frightening. You don't take overdoses of anything unless you're suicidal, and then you should get psychiatric help before you try and kill yourself.
Well, you know, as we talked about before, even too much water can kill you. So to be clear, there's nothing wrong with Benadryl. There's something wrong with misusing it.
Low doses around for 80 years without complaint, right.
By the way, following the report of the alleged overdose and death of one teen, as well as several reported hospitalizations, Benadryl maker Johnson & Johnson took action, issuing a warning about the challenge and working with social media platforms to remove harmful content. The Food and Drug Administration followed with a health warning about taking Benadryl at more than the recommended doses. Several organizations have partnered to educate parents and caregivers about the risks of online challenges and the importance of medication safety. Here's the thing, though. A year from now, this will be played out, and impressionable idiot kids, and maybe some idiot adults as well, will be going to TikTok or whatever and finding something else to do for a challenge. And I don't know what it is. It seems like every generation there's somebody that comes along and does this, and they just have to abuse something. You wouldn't take a whole bottle of Advil, for crying out loud, and think, oh, I'm going to get high. No, you're going to get dead. But so they just happen to pick this now. It became viral. It caught on. And I guess it's just, it's really sad that there are people that think, oh, I can just do this and there's no consequence. You can't tell me what to do. It's like, well, we won't have to. You won't be here. And I'm not being funny about any of this. I'm shocked that, you know, you have to tell a 15-year-old this ain't a good idea.
Let me tell you what started it. It was the business of taking very large doses of Benadryl to cause hallucinations was in a computer network. It was published in a computer network, and thousands of people got to see this published article in the computer network. It's frightening. Should never have been. They're telling people, if you want to have hallucinations, you'll have the fun of having hallucinations. Yeah, and you can also die.
Well, you know, I mean, I know people, and admittedly, I was a kid in the 60s and the 70s, but I knew people that absolutely fried their brain. You know, they think Reverend Jim on Taxi is just a funny character, and he is, but I've known people who were like that before and after because of the amount of pharmaceutical substances they ingested, thinking, well, this is fun. This is not going to have any long-term effect. And, of course, by the time it does, it's too late. So I've never been a fan of any of that stuff.
Incidentally, the computer article didn't describe the serious side effect of death. It said you can have seizures by taking 12 to 15 Benadryls at once. Frightening.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, obviously, it's not a pharmaceutical commercial where they have to explain all the side effects to it. It's just some moron putting stuff online saying, hey, kids, this will be fun. And you find out it's definitely not.
Hallucinations are fun. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the saying used to be drugs are for people who can't handle life. And some comedian came along and said life is for people who can't handle drugs. Ha, ha, ha. Really funny. Except when somebody dies or they cook their brain on the stuff. So be aware of what your kids are doing and... I'm sorry I have to say that. Like I said, they'll be on to something else by next summer, and we'll have to worry about that. We're talking with Dr. Gabe Merkin. The next story here, and I apologize in advance if you're having brunch, but I mention it because it's more of a mystery, and it's not pleasant. Mystery of explosive diarrhea parasite outbreak in the U.S. as experts try to figure out what's causing it. A stomach-churning parasite that can cause explosive watery diarrhea has sickened over 140 people across multiple states, with the highest number of cases in New York, although it's also made it to Pennsylvania. According to the CDC, 145 people ranging in age from 5 to 86 years and from 20 states contracted a parasite called Cyclospora. Is that close?
That's correct, Cyclospora.
Between May and June, with 20 hospitalized. Fortunately, there have not been any deaths yet. Since none of the patients had traveled recently, officials believe it was caused in food, although they're not sure the exact source. The parasite causes it, a type of food poisoning that leads to diarrhea, severe cramping, nausea, vomiting, and fatigue. If you've ever had food poisoning, you know it's not pleasant. If there's one place on Long Island, I'll never eat cheesecake again. I'm sorry. But I probably shouldn't have been eating it in the first place, but I like it, so... Yeah, I mean, I was miserably sick 24 hours later, but I got over it. This is something where people are not getting over this. Sometimes symptoms...
And they're getting very sick, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes symptoms may not appear at all. The infection can go away on its own. Symptoms can last for a month or longer if not treated, including the risk of dehydration. Treatment is a course of antibiotics, specifically, and I have no idea how to say exactly what that word is.
Bactrim.
Okay, well, it's the simpler word. In addition to avoiding food or water at risk of contamination, the CDC also recommends following food safety handling recommendations for safe preparation and storage. I'm just amazed that we have all the standards that we have now, and of course, everybody follows the rules, don't they? No. Which is why you get stuff like this. But this one seems to be... a super bug as opposed to a regular bug.
Right. And that means that if you have diarrhea that's lasting more than a few days, you ought to check with your doctor. Your doctor can do a simple culture for the parasite Cyclospora. And Bactrim, which is a very safe antibiotic, it's given to children, can be used to clear it up very rapidly. Without it, you may have diarrhea and be miserable for months.
It just amazes
so
me that
diarrhea should be checked. That's correct. Chronic diarrhea should be checked.
Yeah, I'm imagining a lot of people are just going to go for over-the-counter medications and start chugging that stuff. And again, as with the previous story, just taking extra is not a good idea. You take the recommended dosage, and if that doesn't do it, you better be talking to a doctor about that or anything. It's just this is the thing that's scary about this is if these were people traveling from overseas and then they're getting sick. Oh, you ate something over there. You had water that was not potable. All that stuff would come into play. But this is just people in the United States going about their business, where they're eating. They haven't been able to track it down to any specific thing, but it's in 20 states, including Pennsylvania. Admittedly, not hundreds of people, but 140 people have been nailed with this in the past 2 months. So that's something, I guess, to keep in mind. I don't know exactly what to do.
So it's available. It's around.
Yeah, I guess the main thing is be picky about where you eat.
And if you get diarrhea that's not going away, check with your doctor. There may be a simple cure right around the corner.
It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, Dr. Gabe Merkin is with us. And here's a story. Beachgoers warned of flesh-eating bacteria, just what we want to hear this time of year. For most beachgoers, the risk remains low. And I know there are a lot of people say, well, what do we do have water around here that people are recreating in. It's not the same as the Atlantic or the Pacific, but some people do go. Good night. The number of people to go to the Outer Banks. I think it's almost a federal requirement that if you live here, you have to go there to vacation. For people with certain health conditions, even a small open wound, the infection can become quickly life-threatening. What is Vibrio? The bacteria called Vibrio naturally lives in warm salt water and brackish water where fresh water and salt water mix. I'll just pause this a second to say where I grew up on Long Island, we had a field behind us and we had a creek, Powell Creek. It would flow fresh water out during the day and the salt water would back up when the tide would come in. And boy, could you smell it. So there's a specific example where this would happen. It can also enter the body through an open cut or by eating raw or undercooked shellfish, especially oysters. Researchers this spring found a bacteria on multiple Long Island waterways, and officials in the Hamptons posted an alert about the findings. In Florida, where Dr. Merkin is, health officials reported 8 cases this year as of early June, compared with 5 during the same period last year. Mississippi health officials also issued a warning in June urging people to take precautions. The warning comes after a South Mississippi man was hospitalized with severe Vibrio infection, according to the Sun-Herald. Steve Wilson's wife told the outlet that they were fishing when he noticed what appeared to be a horsefly bite on his foot. They initially dismissed it. The next day, the leg became extremely painful, and the infection spread quickly. He remains in critical condition as doctors work to save his life. Health experts said the best protection is simple. Avoid entering warm coastal water if you have an open wound. You should be cognizant if you have one and not find out at the time. That includes the recent surgical incisions, piercing, tattoos, even small cuts. Small cuts, what I'm thinking of. People with liver disease, diabetes, cancer, or weakened immune systems face the highest risk for severe illness. Anyone who develops redness, swelling, severe pain, blisters, or rapidly worsening symptoms after exposure to seawater should seek medical care immediately. The CDC recommends doctors begin treating as soon as a Vibrio wound is suspected, without waiting for lab results. Doctor, have you heard much about this?
Yes, it's been on and off in the medical literature also. If you have an open cut, don't go into brackish water. Don't go into seawater. Don't go into, you should never put an open wound or a tattoo or any broken skin anywhere into the water, because if within 24 hours or 36 hours after you put your cut into a water, you get redness and swelling, you may have Vibrio, and Vibrio can kill you. It's a flesh-eating bacteria that enters. It usually doesn't enter through intact skin, but if you have a cut, it'll enter through the cut, and then the very next day, it happens very fast, you get a huge swelling and redness and itching, and it can get into your bloodstream, and you can go into shock, and you can even die from this kind of thing. And we, of course, antibiotics, and it's treated very seriously. Once a doctor diagnoses a person with a cut who gets infected in the water, they're supposed to put them on intravenous antibiotics immediately because it can spread rapidly through the bloodstream, and it can even cause death. So the key is, if you have a cut or a deep wound, It's a good idea with any cut that's open, an open wound, to take buy over-the-counter antibiotics like Neosporin, rub a little bit of that ointment on that over the cut, put a Band-Aid or a gauze pad on top of it and protect it, and don't go into ocean water or seawater or any brackish water at all, because Vibrio will enter through broken skin and it can have very serious consequences. And when you have any cut at all, it's not a bad idea to protect yourself by putting the ointment on the cut, the outside of the cut, put a pad on top of it and keep it covered for a week and let the area start its healing. And the people who are most likely to die from this are people with underlying problems who would have trouble with infection anyway. If you have diabetes or you have a cancer or a serious disease, and you get Vibrio, that can be a fatal disease that you got from having a cut and going into water that was contaminated with a germ called Vibrio that could have been cured with immediate intravenous antibiotics. This is treated with intravenous antibiotics because you have an urgency.
Would that also be true for, you say, brackish water, but would it also be true for fresh water that you're not sure of?
Yes. It can be the bacteria can get in anywhere, and it better to be safe than sorry. And let me tell you something. You hear a lot about don't take antibiotics for nothing. I don't think it's as dangerous to use antibiotic ointment. I'm not telling you to take it by mouth because we take too much antibiotics and we get into trouble from this. But if you take antibiotic ointment and put the grease will cover it and protect the outside very nicely from getting infected, even though it's an open wound, and you put a Band-Aid or a gauze pad on top of it, you're protecting yourself and you may even be saving your life. The key is open cuts don't get put in community waters.
Well, here's something that I'll just use as an example. You say, well, how are you going to get an open cut? How are you going to not know if you have something? Well, if you're out walking, if you're not wearing long pants, you get some scrape on your leg, that can be an open cut. It can be the same thing. I remember one time my dad went fishing where he grew up, and it used to be a swimming hole there. They used to have an ice house and everything. We're talking rural Pennsylvania. And this is later in life, and he comes home from fishing, and my mother looks at his face. What happened to you? He says, I tripped and fell over my own feet. And she says, you're almost 80 years old. What? Think of me. If you fall there, something happens to you, I'm going to know about it. But also, the cuts on his face, it's like, you know, luckily he didn't take some of the water from the fishing hole and or what used to be the swimming hole and put it on his face to clean the cuts off. He didn't even know how bad he had. I mean, he didn't have a mirror with him. But that could have been something, if there had been anything in the water, where it would have gotten into his system that way.
Well, that's right. If you have a cut, don't go into community water.
You know, if you have bottled water with you, chances are that's pretty much safe to if you have to clean a wound, but don't just grab a puddle of water. You wouldn't grab a puddle of water. You wouldn't. So don't grab something out of the stream or the
which you
the
know
creek
is
or river.
Contaminated with something. Yes.
Yeah, because you don't know what's in there. So, you know, just as a thought for something like that. We're just about out of time, but I wanted to make mention. We talked about this briefly a long while back. There was this study, low carb versus low fat debate. Study suggests food quality means more for heart health. What's healthier, a low carbohydrate diet or a low fat diet? Both have been touted in their supposed benefits. A new study adds to evidence that focuses on macronutrients. Carbs, fats, and proteins may not be the best approach to improving cardiovascular health. The findings published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology suggest that diet quality matters more than composition. Although research has shown that the quality of diet is important for cardiovascular health, it's less clear whether this is more essential than the ratio of carbs, fat, and proteins a person eats. In other words, don't eat garbage, I'm guessing?
Well, in other words, don't eat ultra-processed food. In other words, low carbohydrate and low fat means that you're getting processed food, which is in a package. And that is not specifically healthy. It makes no sense. I think it's stupid. I think it's absolutely stupid to be low carb or low fat, because the healthiest diet in the world is a diet that comes out of nature. It's fruits, vegetables, vegetables, whole grains, beans, seeds, and nuts. That's what's healthy. And to say cut out carbohydrates or cut out fats or eat everything in a package is asking for nutrient deficiencies, which are not healthy and asking for trouble. You should be eating fresh fruit, vegetables, whole grains, beans, seeds, and nuts. You should not be eating packaged food that's been ultra-processed and had all kinds of things removed. Don't believe in low-fat or low, ultra-low carbohydrate diets. They're asking you to eat processed, ultra-processed food, which just is not healthy by itself.
So there's a happy medium that you have to find in there.
Yes, and fresh fruit. You're better off eating food that's right there on the counter, not eating food that's in a package that you don't know what's in it, because you can't believe, nobody's checking to find out what's in all the packages, whether the labels are honest. With United States government doesn't have somebody to check. They've hired four companies to check, companies that have more than $20,000 a year in sales. Those companies are checked badly. We're not really checking processed food at all. We don't know how healthy it is. We know you're better off with an apple than a cookie.
You know, it's interesting. I read somewhere that the average supermarket has a certain number of items on average in the United States, and it's an astronomical number. But I'm thinking, since I've been talking to you over the years, I walk in there, and it's like, yeah, I can't buy most of this garbage. I can buy the produce, I can buy the vegetables, I can buy the stuff that's in the section where you first come in. But a lot of the stuff in the center there, yeah, probably not the best to eat.
That's correct, because you don't know what's in it. You can't depend on the labeling because nobody's checking.
Yeah, it's unfortunate some of it, quite frankly, I haven't had in such a long time. I would sit there and watch a half-hour situation comedy and eat an entire box of Nilla wafers. It's been so long since I've had Nilla wafers that I went by it in the store the other week and I looked at the price. It was sticker shock. It's like, wait a minute, the last time I bought it was $1.47. Now it's like five something. So it's been a while. But the more that stuff is processed, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be less expensive.
Well, they're charging more to save you.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're doing it for altruistic reasons.
Mm-hmm. And just to remind folks that you and Mrs. Merkin are still doing how many miles a week on the bike?
We're doing 23 miles a day.
23 miles a day. It's a recumbent tandem bicycle. And I guess it proves that activity can keep you a lot younger.
Oh, it has to keep you alive.
Well, hopefully
it's absolutely necessary. People may know that Diana has serious lung disease. Her lung disease, she's had it for 20 years. And most people with this interstitial lung disease don't last anywhere near that long. So she's doing fine.
Nobody's going to live forever. But at the same time, you can make a college try to live as long as you can, as healthy as you
live
can.
Live longer, yes.
Yes. Dr. Gabe Merkin, once again, thanks very much.
Thank you, Doug. And everybody, thank you for listening.
Podcast up at WRTA.com in minutes.